Hey, this is John Williams, and I am tempted to begin this week's edition of the Mincing Rascals with, I've got this podcast thing, and it's effing golden, but I'm not going to do that. The Rascals, though, I can assure you, are chomping at the bit to dive into the Rod Blagojevich story, the Roger Stone story, and a couple of other things at the end. Remember, you can always email the Mincing Rascals, care of me, John Williams at WGNradio.com. I'm hoping you're sharing this with your friends, and I hope you give us a good rating if you think we deserve one. There is, in the Mincing Rascals podcast this week, a fake commercial, but I'll start with the real one. This edition is sponsored by the Joint Relief Institute. If you've got knee pain, I want you to go there and get it taken care of. They literally have this amazing machine. It's a digital imaging thing. And you sit there, and on either side of your knee, they put these pads, and then you and they are able to see your knee literally as it moves. You'll see the joints. And you can see where the tissue is deteriorated. And then if you want to, you can watch. It's a pain-free, non-surgical procedure. They put a lubricant in there. I literally watched the inky black substance go right to the spot where my tissue used to be. And it really works. I'm telling you, this is a pain-free, fast procedure that your insurance almost surely pays for. You can get rid of that knee pain. Dial it down from an 8 to a 2. Now, they've got two locations. They're in Oak Brook and Orland Park, and it's the same phone number for either spot. So call this number. Tell them we said hi. 708-888-0000. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain. Today is Thursday. It's February 20th, 2020. I'm just looking. I just noticed the calendar reads 022020.
We'll be in touch, so you be in touch.
I'm John Williams. This is the Mincing Rascals, the podcast we record weekly. The studios of WGN Radio. Email the Rascals, care of me, John Williams at WGNradio.com.
I'm Steve Bertrand from the WGN Radio Newsroom.
I'm Austin Berg, Vice President of Marketing at the Illinois Policy Institute.
I'm Heather Sharon of the Daily Line.
I'm Eric Zorn, the horse-faced columnist from the Chicago Tribune.
Yeah, wow. We can't go to Elizabeth Warren first because we got to start with Blagojevich, but we'll get there. Former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich's Twitter handle now includes, this is his Twitter handle, innocent of all charges, I did not let you down, follow me on this journey to clear my name and reveal the truth. His sentence commuted by President Trump, Blago has wasted no time talking to reporters on his stoop, to Fox News, to Chuck Gowdy.
Can I just say, I refer to it as his Evita porch, because doesn't it kind of look like an Evita? Am I the only one?
Ronnie's chin is bleeding all over the microphone right now.
I'm bruised and I'm battered and I'm bloody. It's been a long time since I've shaved with a normal razor.
Don't cry for me, Roscoe Village.
By the way, we have a new sponsor, Blago Band-Aids. Hi, I'm Rod Blagojevich, and whenever I'm released from prison and cut myself shaving before giving a big speech, I use Blago Band-Aids. Manufactured right here in Illinois by hardworking seniors who should get free CTA rides and used by leading hospitals that contribute to my campaign. Don't dab at that tiny cut that just won't stop bleeding. Blago Band-Aids come in white, tan, black, brown, and my new favorite color, orange. They trump the competition and...
they're golden.
Does the president's motivation matter? I mean, does the means matter if the ends are right? Maybe Blago should have got out in about eight years.
Well, that's why this one was such an interesting story to watch, because most people probably agreed he should have been released. But Trump's doing it, I think, probably to point out that he thinks the Justice Department is overzealous. You know, it came just a day before his, or 2 days before his buddy Roger Stone was sentenced. So I think his method was probably not the right one, but it's hard to argue about it unless you're an Illinois Republican. Illinois Republicans hate the idea.
And some Democrats.
But Durbin was on board, right? I mean, Durbin was on talking to you, John, said he thought he'd served enough time.
Yeah, but he didn't say that he wants Trump to pardon him or commute his sentence because the Justice Department has overreached.
Well, as I've been saying all along, it was a very long sentence. However, the fact that he never expressed any remorse or contrition compounded the offense for me every day that he refused to apologize and admit what he did. So I would have been happy if he'd been out years ago if he had copped to what he did. So the fact that he's let out without having to say that he's sorry is really troubling to me. And I think that Trump's motivations do play into this, because I think he's just laying the groundwork for blanket pardons for Roger Stone, given a too light sentence today in federal court on Thursday, and Manafort and who else is that? Flynn, all these other people who are going to be packed off to prison or not. He's going to let them all go. And if you look at the pattern of the pardons that he gave out and the commutations he gave out, it's like it's wealthy, connected, mostly white people who is excusing for their crimes. And I think we're just going to see a raft of that, because he has decided that he is the law.
I would appreciate his commuting Blagojevich's sentence more if he actually knew the story.
He doesn't know how to pronounce his name.
We have commuted the sentence of Rod Blagojevich. He served 8 years in jail.
He can't even pronounce his name right. He got it wrong twice
in
a row.
Well, he barely knows the guy.
Well, he really barely does know the guy, and he doesn't even know the story. I mean, he said a lot of, if you get impeached for braggadocio, then everybody gets impeached.
You know, he shouldn't have said what he said, but it was braggadocio, you would say. I would think that there have been many politicians, I'm not one of them, by the way, just in case, but that have said a lot worse over telephone.
Hey, so he said that in August, okay, in the president's on the tarmac or on the lawn, and he said, you know, he probably was a little braggadocio in a phone call. I wouldn't do that, but he did that. That was about the time that the whole Ukraine scandal was starting to come to the surface. If you listen to that cut again, it's interesting, because it comes, I just wonder if the White House was aware of the whistleblower complaint at the time he said that, because it fits perfectly.
So if Blago is okay for misspeaking on a phone, then Trump is too.
Well, I don't think he was that conscious, but it just sort of was in his mind. He goes, well, he was bragging on the phone. I would never do that.
I feel obligated to point out that, of course, Blagojevich was convicted not only of attempting to sell Barack Obama's former Senate seat, but for shaking down the operators of Children's Hospital and extorting a racetrack owner for official acts, which makes the whole back and forth about the Senate a little bit beyond, you know, it sort of doesn't matter. I think there are clear indications that Blagojevich abused his position of power, and he was sentenced for those crimes, regardless of, you know, just taking the whole Senate seat out of it. And I think that it undermines what the proper role of government should be. And, you know, it's heartrending, I think, to me, to see somebody like Rod Blagojevich, who I think a lot of people believed in at some point as like an immigrant success story to come to Illinois, somebody who sort of talked about the power of American government to right wrongs and to, you know, be a model for the free world.
He used to sleep on the top bunk bed and look out the window.
Right. I mean, he's somebody who clearly knows a lot about American history, who had a reverence for the presidency and the institutions of government, and to see him reduced to "they lied on me," it's just a horrific tale all the way around.
They lied on me.
That's what he said.
I would have appreciated more questions from the gaggle of people outside of his house.
Well,
any questions.
He was answering. A lot of people were asking, "Did you miss us? What are you going to do next?"
There's a whole other conversation to be had about the media's reaction to Blagojevich's commutation.
Well, and the sad part to me was not obviously Trump. What Trump did sends a pretty awful message to the people of Illinois who are dealing with federal corruption, a massive sweeping probe right now. But what was truly sad for me is he is returning to an Illinois that is as corrupt as when he left it. And because of people like him being used as not necessarily a scapegoat, but a symbol of we're rooting out corruption because the governor's in jail. And right after he was impeached and indicted, the Illinois Reform Commission, this group of, you know, good government folks appointed by Quinn, traveled the state for 100 days, heard different ideas about anti-corruption reform in Illinois. Section 4 of their report, you can look it up online, talks about structural reforms we need to stop corruption and have greater efficiency in Illinois government. 3 key points. 1, fair maps. 2, term limits for legislative leaders. 3, less autocratic control in the leadership of the House and Senate. Madigan's House hasn't done any of those 3 things, and the current governor who gave a budget address right after Blago was let out is not asking him to. So until that happens, we're just going to have more Blagojeviches. We're still the most corrupt state in the nation, even though we have his story.
What question did you want the reporters to ask him on the lawn?
Should Rezko still be in jail, too? What do you think about your actions, not just with the Senate seat, but with the CEO of the Children's Hospital and the owners of the racetrack industry? Do people in Illinois, is this how, an interesting question to me is, at the heart, one of the centers of this federal investigation is whether ComEd was basically ghost payrolling members of Madigan's political machine.
You're talking about the current probe, the not current the probe. Blagojevich thing.
What part of that, how is that different from what Blagojevich did? Is ComEd giving campaign contributions to Madigan because they're a state-regulated utility and he gives them favors? Seems pretty similar.
Do you think we've cleared that up sufficiently? Have we made it, in fact, clear to politicians what is and isn't fair game in terms of soliciting campaign donations?
This isn't close. I want to review the bidding a little bit on this Children's Hospital story. And what happened was there was $8 million of money that was earmarked by the state to handle Medicaid, supplement Medicaid payments for doctors who were seeing poor children. And there were places in the state where poor kids were not getting medical care because the doctors couldn't afford to see them, and they were flooding emergency rooms at places like Children's Memorial. So the state had okayed this $8 million. And Blagojevich, hearing about this, was holding this money back and had told his people that he wanted to get $50,000, and I guess then they lowered it to $25,000 from Patrick Magoon, I think his name is, who's CEO. Not just he was a CEO of Children's Hospital, but he was also head of this network of other healthcare providers from other hospitals that dealt with this problem. And he was holding his money back. And at one point in the conversation, they say like, "Well, we haven't given this money out yet, right?" And they say, "No." He goes, "And we could hold it back for budget reasons, right?" And they go, "Yeah." He goes, "That's good to know."
So sounds like the Ukraine aid.
So there are some real parallels to this. This is a guy who was willing to withhold this money from poor children, their health care, in order to get a campaign donation. And I don't think that that's just close to the line. I don't think it's like, "Oh, well, you know, I can see where he would think that's right." If he didn't know that was wrong, then he's like a sociopath.
He is a sociopath, but like the Ukraine aid, they say no money exchanged hands. The funds were released in the case Ukraine.
Magoon testified that he wouldn't even take, he ended up not taking Robert Blagojevich's calls, and he kept us not taking the calls because he knew what these guys were doing. They were trying to squeeze him for money, and it was just obscene. To me, that is that is so outrageous. It's not this Senate seat where he's jerking Jesse Jackson Jr. around and stuff. Trying to withhold money from suffering poor children. So you can
follow me on my journey to clear my name and reveal the truth. By the way, what was the matter with the media performance on the lawn? What was bothering you?
It was overkill.
Back away, legacy media!
There were, at one point, I think 50 camera crews there, and certainly there were national crews there, so it wasn't all Chicago. But there are, I don't know, off the top of my head, 24 other things that those reporters would have been better tasked to spend their time. You know, I didn't send anybody from the Daily Line there. I wasn't going to go there. There wasn't anything that has any, you know, that he was going to say that would have any actual impact on anybody's life in the state of Illinois.
We talk a lot on this podcast about the need for outlets to make money, media outlets to make money. And I'm damn well sure that that's what most people paid attention to yesterday.
We ran the audio nonstop here.
Sure. I the question is there a way that we can leverage those sound bites while, you know, sort of, you know, sharing, you know, did we need 8,000 camera crews there?
Okay, but let's answer the question. Was there any news value? News value. I mean, that you want to watch and it's entertaining is sufficient.
Car crashes are also big ratings getters.
Was it anything more than a car crash?
No. Not particularly, but, you know, the question isn't, is the media going to flock to him this first day when he comes out on his porch and gives his statements? The question is, are we going to continue to pay attention to him? Is he going to get a platform as a radio station in town, going to give this guy a talk show? Is he going to become someone, a go-to person for commentary? In that case, I think some of this criticism will be really warranted. You know, what he has to say when he first gets out? He was the governor of Illinois. I think it's interesting. I hope that he follows the George Ryan model of disgraced ex-governors and just kind of goes away to Kankakee and
but he's,
never heard
he's
from
writing
him
a book, right?
I was
isn't
say,
George Ryan coming
so you
out
think
book?
He should only speak through Snead at the Sun-Times?
Or comment on current governor's
action? Well, yes, he and Maury Posley have written a book about the death penalty.
Well, if he doesn't find a job, then he has to go back to jail. The terms of his parole, if you
no,
will.
No, not back to jail.
Is he's that, well, I don't know what the consequences
community
are.
Community service.
Well, he has to do community service or he has to find work.
He's going to get pardoned. He's angling for a pardon. That was what all that tongue bathing of Trump is I'm convinced. Well, he gets on like, how many times do you say he's a kind man? Who's ever said that Donald Trump is a kind man? That is one thing Donald
Trump
is not. Trump
didn't like that.
So what's the point of commuting? I mean, I know there's what the point of commuting a sentence is, but then and putting sort of, you know, community servers or have to be employed on that, those contingencies. I don't quite get that.
Well, I think that's what happens to anybody.
If you're paroled.
Reporting today from the New York Times that Blagojevich's commutation was fiercely opposed by people within the White House. And this was sort of a compromise reached between Kushner, who was pushing it, and those people to get it to the president's desk.
Kushner wanted him released as well.
Yes.
He did have that shout out, which was really weird.
It was
Middle East and Blago. What an interesting portfolio, right?
And criminal justice. I guess he's been leading on a lot of the criminal justice.
Yeah, he's now in charge of an internal pardon team at the White House, which is now taking the pardon power from the Department of Justice to centralize it in the White House.
He was issuing pardons to people who had pleaded guilty to their crimes. I don't quite understand the logic to that.
Plenty of presidents have that blemish on there.
Well, I give Trump credit for doing this when he's facing the voters rather than what Obama did. For instance, he issued just this incredible raft of pardons on his way out the door when he's unanswerable to anybody. I think
Obama did that?
Yeah, he did. Clinton did too. Mark Rich. And I think that is the worst. I think there ought to be once you've lost an election, your power of the pardon and commutation should dry up instantly.
Oh, that's nice.
I think so. I mean, I think what you saw with Obama, what you see with Clinton is cowardice, and it's an abuse of that power that you have to do that.
There's also something highly ironic that his sentence was commuted when he left office. He had thousands of commutation and pardon requests backed up on his desk.
The most in the country.
Yeah,
who are you talking about?
Blagojevich.
Because that was a big thing with Rauner, right? Trying to work through
those.
Right.
He took almost no action on those. And that was, I think, a scandal that was undercovered by
the
Chicago media.
That's because that would require work.
I covered it. I want to say that. I wrote about that several times.
Undercovered is not correct. Yes.
But it's what Heather says is absolutely right. Blagojevich is a huge hypocrite when it comes to justice issues. That he was the worst governor in the country when it came to pardons and commutations and clemency petitions of all sorts, that he pushed them off on the desk. He didn't want to deal with them because he thought they were politically risky.
There's only over 2,000 people at one point, right?
3,500, I think, was the total.
Well, but he's had time to think about that now and is going to come out and champion their cause. So you remember Wallace Davis, 27th Ward Alderman,
yes,
convicted, and this was back when my job was to chase released aldermen from jail.
So it was a full-time gig, is what you're saying.
It was a full-time gig. And we chased Wallace Davis from the federal lockup, the MCC, to his lawyer's office in the Monadnock building, which is a few blocks. And he comes out, and afterward, he talked to reporters, and he had a Bible in one hand and the Quran in the other.
Oh, that's lovely.
You know, and he had found everything he could possibly find to turn his job or his life around. And I'm sure that's what Rob Blagojevich is going to do as well.
Speaking of questions you wanted to have asked to people, first of all, Monadnock building, great place to have like an after jail caper.
Right.
It's like the setting is perfect.
Why? What's that building like?
It's just very theatrical. It's very old style Chicago, right?
Yeah.
But questions we want to ask, not just to Rod, to every other person in Illinois political leadership. What did we learn from what he did, and why hasn't the culture changed? Two very simple questions, and it can't just be platitudes about how, you know, we need to get rid, we need to tackle corruption, and that's the end of the statement. We've had enough of that.
That's a really good point. Yeah, what did we learn, and what did we do about it?
Well,
who's the we? Michael, you mean politicians know better,
yes,
or
the General Assembly and the constitutional officers?
Well, you will go to jail for. I mean, you know, what was it?
Clearly, that doesn't deter anyone.
Yes,
we're still
George
as corrupt.
Ryan was in prison when Blagojevich was committing his crimes,
and Blagojevich is in jail when all of these other.
Correct.
State lawmakers.
I mean, Michael Madigan was served a subpoena last week, right?
Well, just yesterday.
He
was named in a subpoena just yesterday in the South Suburbs, the same
so
day Blago got out.
What else you got then? So what else could we do other than throw them in jail? If they can't learn, they can't learn.
We have to stop relying on the federal government to police our elected officials in Illinois. It's insane. There's very simple rule changes you can make. Strengthen the legislative inspector general. Chicago's done a lot of these already, which is why it's so maddening. Revolving door rule. Don't let lawmakers lobby other local governments. Pass fair maps. Pass term limits for legislative leaders. Take away power from the speaker's office in determining which bills get a hearing. All pretty simple. Let's start there at a baseline, and then we can talk about if we need to do anything more.
Austin's got my vote for governor.
When I listen back to the tapes, though, you know, of all of the scheming that Blago was doing and all of the phone calls, which were all about him, I came away with the impression that he was a lazy governor. One of the reasons that those commutations or pardons were stacked up on his desk was because that required work, and he didn't do it. Do I recall correctly? He didn't go to the office a lot. He would just stay at home and work with a tracksuit on out
or
of his
house. He'd fly back and forth from spring, right? He'd spend his nights in Chicago.
And who could forget the image of him hiding in the bathroom from his budget director who was there for briefing and he wouldn't come out of the bathroom and they knew he was in the bathroom.
He didn't want to do the job.
And then, there's Bradley Tusk's book who said
he
stood in for the governor in a, you know, national security role-playing event after September 11th. I mean, these tales are legion, and anybody who feels tempted to feel sorry for, I'm sure, the human cost of nearly 8 years in jail should think about him hiding in the bathroom rather than doing the people's work.
Do you feel bad for Patty?
I feel bad for his daughters.
And that's where we've had this part of this conversation before.
Yeah, Patty had a phony baloney job at Tony Resco's real estate firm, and you can hear her in the background on some of these tapes. She was she was an enabler. I think she's lucky she didn't end up in prison.
Maybe
as well.
The daughters are better off.
This is why she won't come on this radio station, right? Because
you breathe air. Steve and I got into this on the radio today, and Steve said, what, you're just now discovering that he's a theatrical manipulator?
That he's not genuine? Yeah.
But when he was on his stoop and he was talking so eloquently, right? I mean, did you guys at least enjoy the man's prose?
Often late at night, I would look through that window and past those bars out into the night sky, and I'd think of home.
I thought it was like kind of Lynchian and weird. Like, it was very, you know, flowery language, but then the way he looked at his daughter and said, just kind of like, look at you, creepy.
And she plays the piano, and we're very proud of her, too. Look at you, sweetheart. Look at you.
John thinks that he had the speech memorized.
No,
he had a lot of time to work on it, you know, but I can almost see that happening during that time.
And as his mind is playing out a certain way, Steve, he says, look at you, and then the daughter gushes some sort of, you know, something, but he doesn't get it. Look at you. If everybody were playing the parts that he imagined, the daughter would have said, you know, Daddy, I'm here. She would have kissed him, or she would have given him some body language back. But it was to his youngest daughter. She's 16, and like a lot of 16-year-olds, she wasn't having this. She was not there for him, and it was such a clunky, manipulative moment.
But in the moment that he finished, you and I both, I thought it was a pretty, I think I used the word eloquent address. I think I
it was beautiful. Yeah, it was beautiful.
Yeah,
it was fiction.
The Chicago Magazine reported that there's been some estrangement in that family. That's very difficult. I think when your dad's in prison and communicating is, if you ever, you know, when you're on a business trip, remember when your kids are little and you try calling and talking to them, and it's just hard. So, and I'm sure it's really difficult. It's not as simple as, oh, I'm back home and we're all cool again. I think
Eric, I was hoping they get, I suspect they will, some sort of family therapy or counseling for the sake of the girls. I mean, my God, it's their lives.
Do you remember the letter that Amy Blagojevich, the older daughter, wrote to Barack Obama?
No.
I think it was right after Obama left office, and Obama had like basically, you know, pardoned half the people in prison, but he didn't let Blago out. And she wrote a blistering letter to him about, you know, calling him a phony and saying that he's unjust. I mean, it was really, really harsh. And I did a column at the time. I sympathized with her, but I did want to point out that he's the one. Rod is the one who did this to these girls. When he was doing his scheming and his conniving and his extortionate ideas, he was putting his family at risk. And that's the thing that I think that, you know, it's not just your freedom. If you're a politician, you're doing that. It's your family. It's going to pay the price. And
so are we done hearing from him, do you think?
No.
Blago?
Yeah.
Well, I'll eat your hat if he has a job stumping for Trump.
Yeah, well, I think he will be an open.
I think I will now be eating your hat.
Didn't Jim Lasky, the disgraced former city clerk, he got a radio show.
Where?
Which station? No station would have hired.
I had to do news on that show. I was...
Oh,
was news guy.
You know, and he was actually pretty good.
He was charismatic. They're all charismatic.
Cliff Kelly still has a show. He was
Does he really? Yeah.
Didn't he step down? He stepped down.
At WVON? Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, he did for
Blago had a show on WLS.
And it was not very good.
It was not very good because it was all grievance. It was 2 hours, I think, on every Sunday. I listened to it each week because I wanted to hear. I was just waiting for
you
to
hate yourself.
Because you're insane.
I listened at double speed, but I did listen. And it was not very good because it was all Blago. It was all his grievance. It wasn't him, because he has a very quick mind. I could imagine him being a show where he's not talking about himself all the time, where he's talking about the news, where he's.
But then, guys, why did he do it? Why did, I mean, he had a decent job.
Because he had this thing,
and it was
golden.
I mean, so what was his ultimate play? What was the ultimate benefit for him? I guess I'm thinking more about selling the Senate seat than shaking down a hospital. That's just the way he did business. So I guess he was unsalvageable. But I'm just wondering, did he want more money? Did he want a better job? What did he want?
He wanted out.
He
did want out.
I had a conversation along these lines with somebody who's, you know, been around state politics for a while, and his explanation was that Blagojevich was so embittered by Barack Obama's rise that he was eclipsed by Barack Obama, and it was after he realized that he would never be president because it would be unlikely for the country to elect two Illinois men president in the same, you know, generation, that he said, well, I'm going to get mine. And it was just as simple as that.
I think also there's something to be said about the structure of state government in Illinois often tends to reward megalomaniacal behavior for long enough, and those people don't get rooted out for a
you
number of structural reasons.
You know who I'd love to hear from? Dick Mell. I would love to
see
Patty's father.
Under sodium pentothal.
Yes. I mean, because it's Dick Mell's fault, essentially, that, you know, the federal investigation got launched. He was the one who sort of dropped the dime on Blagojevich after Blagojevich basically tried to claim credit for, you know, becoming governor. That's the person who I would love
that
to.
That had to do with the landfill.
Right.
Yeah, and the south suburbs wasn't there.
Blagojevich was trying to throw Mel under the bus, and Mel came back. And
I think a lot of questions, the sort of retail questions a lot of people had, the Tribune did such a nice job. Jason Meisner and Stacey St. Clair answered a lot of the questions that people would want to ask, like, can he run for office again? He could yet be a member of Congress or president. Can he vote for Trump? He said he wants to.
He absolutely can.
Can he be a lawyer again? A commission in Illinois is about to determine whether or not they'll disbar him permanently. It's not clear yet. Do I understand that?
Go to him for.
Well, he was appealing that in before his commutation. Before he got out, he was already starting that process.
Also, how can you be a felon and be a lawyer?
That's why he wants a pardon. I think he wants a pardon because he can. There are some avenues that will be open to him if he's pardoned for that. I also want to recommend Jeff Cohen's piece today in the Tribune, a really long sort of review of the bidding with Blagojevich. Jeff co-wrote still the best book about Blagojevich that's been written.
Blago can write another book, but Law in Illinois, which may be unconstitutional, says you cannot profit from your crimes.
His first book was awful and self-serving and dull, and I can't imagine he's going to have anything to add to it other than the view from the top bunk for the last 8 years.
But he's already
there's the
writing.
My view from the
trademark,
top bunk.
Trademark Eric Zorn.
That's really good. The Elvis story. But he could write a book about his whole comeback narrative that he's already begun, you know, kind of fomenting.
God,
right?
Heaven
that would
help
be
us
be
if
about.
He has one, if he rises to some power or position of prominence.
Can't
you know, he
that.
Wanted to be an ambassador.
Well, that's when Obama was elected.
I would love it if Trump would make him ambassador to New Zealand, right, like they did with Carol Moseley Braun, and put him halfway around the world.
Serbia.
How about Director of National Intelligence?
Yeah. Let's go to Trump land for just a little bit, and the path we'll take is this Roger Stone sentencing. What was it? 3 years and 4 months. 40 months. Is it so severe that the president might yet pardon Roger Stone?
It doesn't matter because he's going to pardon him.
You think so?
Oh, absolutely. I think this Blagojevich commutation and all the other pardons he was issuing was just laying the groundwork for that.
So according to the Washington Post, the Department of Justice essentially withdrew that
second they started arguing 7 to 9 again
they
today.
Asked during the hearing today for him to be sentenced to 7 to 9 years in prison. And she accepted all of the enhancements, you know, threatening a witness, lying, threatening the judge's life, but that she took his age into account.
So,
and that was the,
well,
that was the major...
I think that happens. Yes. But so what happened there where... They went in 7-9. Barr says you can't do that. You've got to refile. Four people walk out of the case. And then they go into the actual sentencing day and start talking 7-9 again.
And they refuse to say who wrote that sentencing memorandum. They refuse to say who crafted that and who ordered it be signed off on. So there's a lot more to be reported about the back and the forth on this.
So do you think that she was just saying, oh, what the hell? 3 years,
no,
4 months, who cares?
It
doesn't matter. He's not going to go to prison. He's going to spend a day in prison.
I think that if you look at the other similar white-collar crimes, when you have a defendant of that age who has no violent crime history, I think most of the sentences are between 3 and 4 years.
Yeah, it doesn't strike me as a...
Him in jail for 4 years scratches that itch for me. Well, I mean, I'm happy to see that.
And just imagine what he's going to have to wear, and that's going to be very hard.
I mean, he has a Nixon back tattoo. Yeah. I mean, that's...
That gets you a lot of cred.
Does it?
Yeah, extra help her
in the prison gym. I'm sure.
I mean, I think perhaps what struck me more than the sentence today was the judge's comment was that, you know, he was going to jail not because he, you know, because he tried to cover up for the president.
And I think it was not that he stood up for
right.
the president, but he covered up for
that's,
the president.
That's what it was. Yeah. And I think that. I mean, I, you know, have long since tried to stop trying to predict what the president is going to do. But if he does pardon him, that's going to be in every headline, in every lead of every story, and the top of every newscast.
For a day.
Sure. You know, like she said, and like the prosecutors in the Stone case said, that at some point, it's just got to be enough to just tell the truth. You can't control the outcome. You just have to tell the truth.
But what are the consequences of that? There's a journalist in town named Steve Bertrand, and he said, if every day is crazier than the day before, then you get away with everything that happened before. Right,
yes,
Heather?
Yes, absolutely. It's a denial of service attack. Essentially, you're sending right. so much stuff at everybody's brain that our brains shut down like the proverbial website.
A caller to our show talking about Blagojevich used the phrase, maybe he invented it, maybe he's heard it, but I thought it was so true. He said it's the normalization of political corruption and that we have that. It's sort of It makes everything go away. We've done that in Illinois with, as you were talking about, Austin, and every day, well, Trump gets away with it.
You know, he's tweeting against the judge ruling in this case. I mean, the sitting president tweeting against a federal judge.
Oh, today already?
No, but he was before. I don't know if he has today.
He has today.
Yeah,
she's looking at her phone.
Yeah. I mean, and that would be an earth-shattering norm if that happened in the Reagan years or any of the Bush years. That would be life-changing. That would, you know,
so career-changing.
Is the theory that the Blago pardon kind of makes that less insane? Because then you can say, "Well, yeah. I'm an equal opportunity offender.
I think he's paving the way for saying that the Justice Department has been pushing over-sentencing, and that's why they're letting him go.
Over-sentencing. I mean, he's. I don't think I'm going to predict right now. Stone's not going to spend a night in prison. He's just not going to. And Flynn and Manafort, all these guys. I mean, he's going to let them all go. And the message that he's sending is, don't turn on me. I've got your back. Do what you have to do to protect me. Period. That's the message that all this is sending. That, you know, this political corruption is not really my concern.
That's the culture in Illinois, right? I mean, we've had almost 900 public corruption convictions since 2000. The year 2000.
Are you serious?
900.
Say that again.
We've had almost 900 public corruption convictions in Illinois since the year 2000, more than any other state.
Well, that just means we've got really good prosecutors.
We've got really good prosecutors.
Rod Blagojevich was one of those convictions. What about the other 899? What are we going to do to not be number one in the next decade?
Okay,
next 20 years.
I do think we need to bring up this Richard Grenell story, too. The guy who was the German ambassador, or is the German ambassador, and was named by President Trump to be the director of DNI, the Department of National Intelligence. I don't even know DNI. But this is apparently, according to the reporting, he doesn't even match or meet the standards written in the statute that created the job. He's going to oversee the 17 intelligence agencies, and he has no intelligence experience whatsoever. Apparently, he sucks up to the president on Fox News. Even the German newspapers have been ripping him as the U.S. ambassador to Germany, and he's going to be named as an acting person who is the most important person for keeping the homeland safe. He's going to be an acting director of DNI, which means the Senate won't get a chance to vote up or down, and the idea is because even Republican senators would not vote to approve this guy.
The line you hear is out of control. The Justice Department, all of these agencies are out of control. Normal people would say, oh, my God, that's crazy.
Right.
I think the counterbalance to that is what I'm hearing is we've got to do something. Maybe this guy's not qualified, but the Justice Department, all of these agencies are out of control. They're going after governors they don't like.
This isn't someone who's not qualified to run EPA, you know, or Department of Energy, where, you know, where Rick Perry didn't know about the nuclear part when he got the job. This is Director of National Intelligence, and this guy has no experience at all in the intelligence background. He's got no managerial experience.
What did you guys think of the Democrat debate and maybe Elizabeth Warren's performance to start?
I think they ate their own last night.
Her first line.
I'd like to talk about who we're running against. A billionaire who calls women fat broads and horse-faced lesbians. And no, I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about Mayor Bloomberg. Democrats are not going to win if we have a nominee who has a history of hiding his tax returns, of harassing women, and of supporting racist policies like redlining and stop and frisk.
I was going to say, Bloomberg's got to love BDSM or something, because he just paid almost half a billion to get tied up and whipped that on national television.
And that is a Mincing Rascal first.
Yeah, so
if I'm him, I don't go. Go to Florida. He had nothing to gain in Nevada. Bernie's way ahead. He doesn't need the platform. He can pay for that airtime.
Oh, he has to get on the stage with those people.
Maybe, not in Nevada. I wouldn't have gone up in Nevada. I would get some momentum, go to Florida, where he's doing kind of well, and then go up and say, you know, he's
but maybe he gets his legs under him a little bit by doing one.
Maybe, but that was awful. That not being there would have been way better than what happened to him.
What happened
last night?
To him last night?
Oh, he got completely pantsed by every candidate.
According to Wikipedia, he was murdered by Elizabeth Warren. Somebody edited his Wikipedia page
Stop.
When Mayor Bloomberg was busy blaming African Americans and Latinos for the housing crash of 2008, I was right here in Las Vegas, literally, just a few blocks down the street holding hearings.
So here's my theory, is that these debates are a really terrible way to winnow the candidates. And I don't know, people aren't going to sit and watch 1 hour town hall meetings of each candidate. But what we had last night were six people raising their hands, begging to be called on to recite lines that they brought in with them. And I don't think that's the way to choose the best person to run for president.
I thought
maybe when there's two candidates, it's different.
Yeah, with two, maybe. Yeah. I thought Biden and Klobuchar kind of disappeared last night. I mean, Klobuchar did get into it with Buttigieg about the fact that she'd forgotten the name of the Mexican president, and the fact that she had voted at one point to make English the official language, which is one of these strange little symbolic, meaningless bills, and I don't even know the history behind that, but I think she sort of disappeared. Biden sort of disappeared. Bernie'd, you know, he did his Bernie thing.
Bernie did well, right?
I thought Bernie did fine. I mean, if you buy into Bernie's stuff, he articulates it well. He's angry. He makes good points. Elizabeth Warren, I think, rose from the dead. I think that she was really in trouble after those last two.
Well, she acted like she knew it, too, that she had to come on strong.
She came on really strong. I mean, if there's someone who seemed like they won that debate, it would be her. You know, Buttigieg is actually pretty skilled politically. He's a good debater. He turns things on a dime. He answers what he wants to answer. He gets off his lines.
He said, we've got a socialist who wants to tear up the party, burn down the party against a billionaire who wants to buy out the party. Why don't we choose a Democrat?
Yeah, he had some really good lines. And I think I would join everybody else in saying that I thought Bloomberg looked awful. And the question was, should he have waited to go to Florida, where the same thing is going to happen? Maybe it's best to get this out of the way now and then send all your TV ads out there
monkeys
to repair the damage.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he clearly didn't have an answer for any of the things that he had to have known he was going to be asked about. I mean, just listen to his answer on stop and frisk, and it is a melange of word jello salad, and there's no actual, you know, anything there. And I thought, you know, his response to Elizabeth Warren's questions about the NDAs and the women who have sued him for sexual harassment.
2 weeks ago, we were awarded, we were voted the most, the best place to work, second best place in America. If that doesn't say something about our employees and how happy they are, I don't know what does.
And I hope you heard what his defense was. I've been nice to some women.
I mean, how did he not know that was coming?
Help me out. Did they sue him or did they sue his business?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah. And his answer was excruciatingly bad.
I like some women, and
well, right. not even the content of the answer, the tone and manner in which he answered it.
So, Mr. Mayor, are you willing to release all of those women from those non-disclosure agreements so we can hear their side of the story?
We have a very few non-disclosure agreements.
How many is that?
Let me finish.
How many is that?
None of them accused me of doing anything other than maybe they didn't like the joke I told. And let me put, there's agreements between two parties that wanted to keep it quiet, and that's up to them. They signed those agreements, and we'll live with it.
So wait, when you say it is up to, I just want to be clear. Some is how many? And when you say they signed them and they wanted them, if they wish now to speak out and tell their side of the story about what it is they allege, that's now okay with you? You're releasing them on television tonight?
Senator, no.
Is that right?
They decided when they made an agreement that they wanted to keep it quiet for everybody's interest.
The thing that dismays me a little bit is that this guy has expressed a willingness to spend billions and billions of dollars to help elect a Democrat. And all of them up there just, you know, threw crap on him all night. And I can imagine him saying, like, you know what?
I don't need this.
I'm going back to New York. I'm keeping my billions of dollars. I'm going to spend them on trying to get big soda taxes.
He did have a good line about Bernie Sanders, the only socialist with three houses.
Yeah, that was good.
That was the one line he got off, and then he just got whacked over the head a million times.
I'm making my own case. We're talking about the line he got off, which he probably came in with.
So you like debates now, huh, Steve? Is that what you're telling us? It's a good way to elect a president?
I still know a lot of Democrats who feel like this is the guy who can take on Trump with his money and his attitude and his competence. And so they're going to say, stop and frisk was not so good.
Well, you go back and talk about stop and frisk for a second. You know, he's had to massage that. But I just wonder if he stood by that. Trump would double down on that. I wonder if the inference actually isn't all that damaging to him. I think there's plenty of people today who would say, young black men in the city, stop and frisk. I know I can't say that, but they wouldn't mind if he didn't run from that.
Well, he got close by saying, you know, I shouldn't have done it, but man, the crime rate really went down. He got a little close to that.
Did he say that?
He came very close to that.
The fact is, this seemed to be fairly indiscriminate racial profiling.
And I'm just suggesting, Steve, that there's some people who are still A-okay with that.
Okay, but they're not brown or black and voting in the Democratic primary. I mean, if your son...
Correct.
If your son, you have two boys, had gotten pulled over or, stood up against a wall and searched just because they happened to be walking down a block, you know, and that's long-term damaging. That's a problem.
If Joe Biden's able to credibly hit you with the fact that you were kind of an overzealous, tough-on-crime policymaker, that's a problem in the Democratic primary. I just want to read to you what the Canadian bookmakers are saying right now. So you can, in Canada, bet on who's going to be the president of the United States. There's bookmakers, and as of the debate last night, Klobuchar is 40-1. I mean, these are people taking money and willing to pay money, and they'll pay you $40 on a dollar bet if Amy Klobuchar wins. 20-1 if Hillary Clinton wins.
Hillary Clinton?
That's got to hurt Amy's feelings. 20-1 if Elizabeth Warren wins. She was 60-1. So she went from 60-1 to 20-1 based on real money last night. Joe Biden is 8-1. Mayor Pete is 6-1. Bloomberg is 4-1. And Bernie is even money. $100 gets you $100. It's still Bernie's to lose.
I thought it was very curious that the Democrats have yet to go after Bernie in any tough way, because if he's the nominee, there's going to be a boatload of opposition research thrown at him right away, and he's not going to be, if the Democratic field doesn't test him, that's irresponsible on their part.
Do you know, last week I asked you guys, who do you think is the person most able to beat the incumbent, which is different than who's most likely to win the primary? And we all had our answers to that. Who is most likely to lose to the incumbent?
Bernie.
That's what I think, too.
Would you all agree with that? Without a doubt.
He is the one who will have the toughest road to win of all of them.
So Sanders wins if he's able to expand the electorate in ways that we've really never seen in a presidential election. So Sanders, his argument is that he can do what he did nationally, what he did to become mayor of Burlington, because he ran once for mayor of Burlington, got like 10% of the vote, ran again and brought all of these new voters in and changed the makeup of who elected mayors in Burlington. And he eked out a victory there, was able to get in office, and was able to use that strength to sort of force through his agenda. That's what he's saying he's going to do here. So in some respects, we're judging him on standards that he is clearly saying that's not the game I'm playing. He has said, I only win if I bring, you know, unlikely voters, new voters, people who have never voted before in their lives to the polls. So in some ways, I don't know that we're comparing actually what he's trying to do with what could be done. But it's definitely some, I mean, he's not walking an easy road here. This has essentially never been done before.
The problem is that the universities and think tanks are full of former politicians who banked on the youth vote coming out for them. That just doesn't seem to happen. Barack Obama did pretty well with young voters. And if you could replicate that, if you really could bring out the young voters. It didn't work in Iowa, and I don't think it worked that well in New Hampshire.
It worked better in New Hampshire than it did in Iowa, but Iowa also was that weird caucus, and nobody's really sure who actually voted for who at this point anyway. But it did work to some extent in New Hampshire.
And I think, you know, Bernie has been successful. He has moved what they call the Overton window, which is this sort of gap with which in which one can speak about certain ideas that are now certainly permissible and logical to talk about Medicare for all, for universal health care coverage, whereas it really wasn't back when Obama was trying to craft Obamacare. It was really unthinkable that we would get like a public option for health care and so on. So he has moved the conversation in these areas. He's maybe, I think, moved some of the conversation about the Green New Deal. These things that he's proposing are never going to get done. Everyone should know this. This is like Trump's wall. It's just something that you talk about in order to show where your North Star is. Even if the Democrats controlled 65 votes in the Senate, I don't think you would get Medicare for all passed. You just don't have that kind
of... It's ironic that some of those policies would benefit the people that are going to vote for Trump.
That assumes that people vote rationally based on their self-interest. And we, of course, know that they don't, that people vote to feel part of a crowd. People vote to signal their allegiance with cultural signifiers. If I were a sports journalist, which I am not, and I think the world is grateful for that, I would have written a story this past week about how incredibly, illuminating it was that we had Donald Trump at NASCAR. We had him at the Daytona 500, and we had Barack Obama at the NBA All-Star Game. Like, that just cried out for a two Americas, story right there. Donald Trump would not have been welcome at the NBA All-Star Game, right? Would Barack Obama have been welcome at a NASCAR race? Maybe.
And Trump got the chant.
God bless America. Have a great race. Thank you. Thank you.
And yeah. Trump did it in a swing state, too.
Yeah. So, I think that, you have to think about, that in some ways voting for a president is like, are you an NBA fan or are you a NASCAR fan? And it's not about how can I ensure that I have health care coverage, even though political reporters who focus on policy like myself would really like it to be, I have studied the policy and I have made a rational decision.
Yeah, I think there's no question about that, that there are a number of voters who vote based on sort of a tribal identity, that we're in that place right now, which is why Trump's poll numbers almost never move, because he's got his people and almost nothing he does is going to move them. And the people who hate him are not going to be moved by, him signing a peace treaty with the Taliban or anything that he might do that would please them. Doesn't impact either. That it's that we have become increasingly tribal, and a lot of it has to do with cultural values. There are a lot of people on the right who feel like their cultural values are disrespected every day by Hollywood, by the media, and so they feel like they're pushed into this corner. I'm probably as guilty of this as everyone else in the media, and my side of the media is like, I'm really not grasping that soon enough to understand what was going on in the 2016 election. I think what Sanders is hoping for is a reverse repeat of that, where you're going to have people who are going to say, like, look, I don't agree with Bernie Sanders about the Green New Deal. I don't agree with him about X, Y, and Z. I am afraid of losing my health care, but I identify with this firebrand leftism, and I don't care that I don't agree with everything that he says. And that can be sort of a mature point of view, because everything he says is not going to happen. You know, you're not going to lose your insurance coverage in 4 years or 8 years of a Bernie Sanders presidency.
The other claim that people usually say, that if they're trying to say Bernie actually has the best chance against Trump, is that, well, whoever runs against him, he's going to brand as a socialist. And I think actually Pete said that at some point, which is kind of interesting. But it matters. The credibility of the claim matters. You could call Joe Biden a socialist, but nobody's going to believe you. You can call Bernie Sanders a socialist or a communist, and a lot of people are going to find that very sticky, especially when every ad you run is going to be him saying things that socialists and communists say.
I still like Amy Klobuchar, even though, like I said, I don't think she did that well last night. I still like the lane that she's in, and I personally prefer her to Buttigieg, just because I feel like she does have more gravitas than he does, and that maybe his candidacy is 8 years off.
Well, we know who the real front runner is by who the president picks on the most.
I was trying to think, what's the path for the non-Bernie candidate to win right now?
Well, what we're looking at, I mean, every 4 years, political journalists salivate over the idea of a brokered convention, but it really might happen this time, where Sanders will go into the convention with a delegate lead, maybe even a substantial delegate lead, but not a delegate majority. So the first ballot, he's not elected. And the second ballot, I believe the rules change, right?
Superdelegates
get to vote, and then I think, I don't know, the delegates are bound beyond the first ballot?
That's correct.
So you can have all kinds of horse trading, and I can imagine the Sanders people walking out of the arena in Milwaukee saying, you know, screw you guys, we're going to
go again.
Well, this is a reversal of what he argued in 2016, of course, because he was leading in the delegate count at some point, and he was leading in the popular vote, and Hillary Clinton was far and away above with the delegate count, and so he argued all the popular vote should count. And, you know, last night he said that, well, it should be the delegates that count, which, you know, if you want to, is a reversal. And, I think that a brokered convention would be the best of circumstances for political journalists and the worst of circumstances for pretty much everybody else.
The Democrats are worried about Sanders winning the nomination. They're terrified of a brokered convention, especially one that doesn't go for Sanders.
Anything else in Illinois or Chicago you guys want to throw into the mix before we walk away?
We had a budget address.
There's just that.
$42 billion.
Yeah, it's just spending the most money we've ever spent as a state. But probably a third tier news story behind the Madigan. Maybe second tier. It would go Blago, budget address, subpoena naming Madigan. At the end of the day, it was a ransom note to the people of Illinois saying, vote for my ideological progressive income tax, or I'm going to take some cuts to your core services that you like.
What is JB asking for up front?
For you to vote for his fair tax, yeah. So,
hasn't this been done before? Didn't Pat Quinn give you an alternative budget, or doomsday budget, I think he called it?
So it's a very classic strategy in Illinois. Pat Quinn did it before the 2011 income tax hike, and it's essentially like going to the doctor with a broken leg, and he says, you get two options. I can either amputate or bloodlet. You can either have core service cuts or severe tax hikes. And that's what we saw yet again. And I think this honestly goes back to the Blagojevich corruption conversation and the culture of corruption in Illinois. The Fair Tax Amendment is not really about fairness. It's about the power of Springfield. It gives them enormous new taxing power, not just to tax the rich, but to tax different kinds of income. It makes it easier for cities to impose local income taxes because they can do it at a lower rate. Makes it easier for them to expand into the retirement tax because they can do that at a lower rate. It's about power. And people should realize that when they're taking a vote on the fair tax, they're taking a vote on whether or not a corrupt Springfield government should have more power or not.
This fair tax amendment, can you just break that down
So right now, Illinois has a constitutional flat tax protection. You have to tax everybody at the same rate on their income. The fair tax, as it was originally written, the amendment that allows for graduated rates, it had the words fair in it. It said it would be a fair tax where you impose lower rates on people with lower income and higher rates on people with higher income. What was passed is an any tax. You may impose any tax on the incomes of the people of Illinois. It doesn't have to be fair. In fact,
when you're amending the Constitution, I don't think you want to put numbers in.
You don't have to put numbers in it, but it's
fair.
But don't call
ambiguous.
It the fair tax if there's nothing in it about fairness. So under that amendment, you could tax poor people at a higher rate than rich people.
You
that
could,
would be allowed.
Austin, they're not going to. And I really object to the campaign against this, which is we're calling it the blank check amendment, which I don't believe that it is. If you look at how this is rolled out around the country, if you look at something like 35 states that have income tax, or nearly every state that has income taxes has some sort of progressivity in it, and you don't see the legislators ratcheting up each bracket at a time. In fact, the taxes tend to go down on the lower brackets and up on the upper brackets, just like it's claimed. I don't want to look at this particular question ideologically. I want to look at it practically. I want to say, what does the state need? What does the state need to run its core services, and where are we going to get that money, and how is it best to take that money? How is it best to get that revenue and inflict the least pain on the citizens? I think that is a fair question.
I think it's totally a question of whether you trust Springfield to use that taxing power wisely. And I think that they've proven time and time again that they don't. They don't respect taxpayers whatsoever, and any inch of power they will use to increase taxes on whoever. Pritzker is saying if he gets this $3.7 billion tax hike, he's going to throw in an extra $200 million into pensions, our biggest problem. The pension payment just went up $500 million in 1 year. And the fair tax, which is supposed to just give us this money we need to right the ship, just as Quinn said, right the ship, pay off our unpaid bills, it is a drop in the bucket. It's not going to solve the problem. The place where the money is in the middle class. So don't give them this new power. That's the essence of the blank check argument, and I think that's compelling.
Thanks for coming in, Eric.
You're welcome. It's good to see you.
Heather and Austin, too.
Thank you.
Happy to be here.
And Steve Bertrand is not happy to be here. He left to go do the news on WGN Radio, but he'll join us again next week. We're produced by Elif Garris. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another pod on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNRadio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.